Yes. So I'm Martin Schmalz. I'm from Boston University. I'm technologically challenged, so please bear with me. And I'm interested in TT-Bar and all other ambulances that I can chase. So I was volunteered to moderate a discussion on the TT-bar asymmetry. That's something that I care a lot about and don't know as much as I care about, but I'm hoping that you will all help. I thought that it would be useful to just show a few slides at the beginning for those of you who have not been around for the last 2 years because you were on an island somewhere without internet. And I just want to remind you what the TT-bar asymmetry is so that we can start discussing. And so over here I wrote some numbers, but before I discuss the numbers, so these are the numbers for those of you, you're supposed to know them all in that half. I'll show them in a sec. So those are actually the experimental values that we're going to be discussing. So let me see if I can change pages. Yes, I can. So what is the TT-bar asymmetry? It is it's about TT-bar production at the Tevatron. You have a proton coming in from the left. P-bars always come in from the right. The top is going this way, the T-bar is going that way. There's an angle theta between the direction the proton would have gone if disaster hadn't struck and the outgoing top quark. The asymmetry is defined as, and this is the one that I'm mostly talking about, is actually in the center of mass frame of the TT-bar, is the number of forward-going tops minus the number of backward-going tops. So this top, in this case, is going forward. And the anti-top's always going in the other direction, so we don't need to keep track of that, divided by the sum of forward plus backward. Okay, so that's the asymmetry. Very briefly on lowest order theory in QCD. So lowest order theory in QCD is you have a quark, anti-quark coming in. They make a gluon, and you make a TT-bar. Or you have two gluons coming in, and then you have some T-channel, or with the gluons crossed, pair of TT-bars. The gluons, of course, are totally symmetrical from the two initial states. The quarks are not totally symmetrical, so that's where you could get your asymmetry from. However, this lowest order diagram here is symmetrical. So the leading term in QCD is completely symmetrical, and you expect small corrections, which I'll say just a little bit more later. Small corrections meaning, you know, 5%-ish. So here is some data. This is a plot taken from a recent paper, where recent means March, from CDF. And this is looking at the TT-bar asymmetry in the case where both tops decay to leptons. And so in this plot here, what we're looking at is not cosine theta, but delta y, which is basically the same as, forward direction is this way, backward direction is that way, along the beam pipe would be all the way over here. And what we're looking at is the number of events. So there are not that many events because we're demanding everybody goes leptonically. Overall, the TT-bar asymmetry has been established with over 1,000 top quarks of data, but here this one has only 300 events in it. And this plot actually has even less because here they're restricting to the case that people are most interested in, where the TT-bar pair is produced at at least an invariant mass of 450 GeV. So these TT-bars are moving a little bit. So it's safer to assume that we understand whether the top actually went this way or that way, right? If you produce them at rest, then the asymmetry isn't really well defined.
Is statistically reconstructed TT-bar invariant mass? You cannot reconstruct TT-bar invariant mass in the literature.
So how is it defined? Do you know?
Well, they might do.
Oh, so.
I think they actually just take the best time.
Yeah, so I think they reconstruct. Oh, yeah, for the dileptons, I don't know. So I think they impose W masses and they impose. I don't know if it's just an average or if they impose the W mass constraints and the top mass constraints.
Well, see what you make to do that. You're not able to reconstruct in TT mass.
Oh, it's still.
It should make a difference for the asymmetry.
Well, it makes a difference for what you include in the plot.
But it gets diluted.
Right, so it's get diluted, presumably, right? If you do that. And if you reconstruct the environment statistically, and so whatever you see here, you should probably multiply by some significant, well, maybe not significant, but some fact.
Yeah, so I mean, what I wanted to show you here is really just an impression of that there is an asymmetry. So the yellow here is the expectation from Monte Carlo that CDF had. Fakes are when QCD jets fake the leptons. And then here are some real backgrounds with real leptons. But anyways, that whole all the backgrounds are roughly symmetrical, are expected to be roughly symmetrical, and you see the data is consistently above the expectation for positive, for a forward direction, and almost consistently below for the backward direction. So this is a very strong signal for something.
This is
next to leading order. You can't do well. So for the TT bar, it should be. It's not completely symmetrical. No, this the TT bar is next to leading order. So the asymmetry is really small. So you don't expect to see very much on just by eye, and it's, you know, with statistical fluctuations. So. So yeah, maybe I should start talking about all the data. So I'll make it visible for some of you. So what I've written here is a table of the what I think are the most significant data. There's D0, CDF, and CDF again. D0 and CDF here are the semi-leptonic data, where one of the tops goes to leptons. And that lepton is used to tag which one was the top and which one was the antitop by the just the charge of the lepton. It's done in muons and in electrons. And so D0 only has a only has data from last year. And what they did is quote a number for the signal asymmetry. What they mean by that is what they think are actually TT bar events. So there are some events that pass the initial cuts and to look like TT bar events, but then they do some sort of likelihood fit to ask what portion of that data is actual TT bars and what is W plus jets, for example. And so they claim that, so this is the outcome of a fit to background and signal, and it has that level asymmetry. CDF has somewhat more raw asymmetry where they include backgrounds, what they think are backgrounds, then they subtract those backgrounds, they get the same level asymmetry. And then a little bit further back here, it gets much more significant.
Is the definition of signal for CDF the same as the definition of signal for D0?
It's slightly different, So this is a fit to four things: signal forward, signal backward, W plus jets with a template for what it looks like. Whereas these guys, I don't think do it asymmetrically. But so it's templates fitting to templates is what you do here. These are all percent. Everything here is percent. And this is all in the center of mass, that's right, of the TT bar system. So there was data, there was signal, and so here is where things get a lot more significant. This is the unfolded, so-called unfolded asymmetry that CDF gives. What they mean by unfolded is they know that they're going to get that some of the asymmetry washes out. So this is supposed to take into just by detector effects and by fluctuations. So they say this is the asymmetry 21%, and I've neglected to write down the error. 21% is what they think, according to their detector simulation, et cetera, how much asymmetry you need to have at the parton level in the production of the TT bars in order to end up with an 8 ± 4% asymmetry actually measured for the signal. Okay, so they say most of the time, or often, the TT bars actually get the signal gets washed out because the T bar may end up being measured in the T direction even though it wasn't going that way. Partly this is really bad. I mean, this dilution is really bad because you produce a lot of the tops near, I mean, not very close to threshold, but somewhat near threshold and centrally. And so if you have a central TT bar not moving very fast, then if you don't have very good resolution on the jet measurements, so actually the direction is determined from the top that goes all hadronically. So you have those three jets, you reconstruct from that the direction that the top was going. If you have any errors in that, that dilutes your signal. If you get one backwards, of course, that hurts a lot. So that's why there is such a large factor here. And then they, in their latest paper, so this they've done a while, this they did a while ago, but in their latest paper on the semi-leptonic tops, this was from January, and this is what created a lot of excitement. They quoted separately what they think the asymmetry, unfolded asymmetry is for events with TT bar invariant mass above 450 and below 450 GeV. Yeah.
Those errors are just
statistics. Actually, so the error, the statistical error here is 10, and the what they think the systematic errors is about 5, and I added them. And here,
All the other numbers left.
Yeah, so for most of these are just, I think are just statistical errors, and the systematics are very small, but as you move this way, the systematics get bigger, and then they quote them, and I paid attention to them, but they always think that their systematic errors are smaller than their statistical errors. Even with the unfolding. So there are some systematic errors that are in here, and there are some systematic errors that are not in there, and we should talk a little bit about that. So one of the systematic, so the unfolding, what is the unfolding? The unfolding takes into account, for example, things like, well, if the TT bars went central, perpendicular to the beam pipe, then I don't have very much sensitivity to the asymmetry. But if it went very much forward, then I have a lot of sensitivity towards it. So there's some cosine theta dependence on how well they think they can capture the asymmetry. And then there's also some energy dependence and things like that. So they have various bins, and then they construct an efficiency for that bin, and that goes into the unfolding. Yeah, I don't know how big that is. I mean, the pictures look pretty symmetrical compared to this sort of number. But so in that unfolding here has to go a model of where you think the events are, because if the events are all, for example, extremely forward and you can just barely get them into your detector, your unfolding efficiency, or your efficiency of measuring the TT bar asymmetry there, is totally different from if they all go this way. And so here they've assumed that the asymmetry has just a linear cosine theta dependence. That is what it is in QCD, to next to leading order, and it is what it is in an axi-gluon new physics model. It's also that shape. But for example, if you had a T-channel W prime exchange, then it's not this shape, and this is a different number here. And, you know, nobody knows exactly. Catherine Zurich has a paper on doing that, but she's not here anymore. Yeah.
I should probably know the answer to this, but in an expediting order process where the TT bar system itself is recoiling against the jet, in the center of mass system, what is meant by the asymmetry exactly?
Well, I don't know. I should probably know this, but Carol.
So if the TT bar system itself is recoiling, it has some PT and PZ?
But this is in the TT bar rest frame.
So is it in the TT bar rest frame or the TT bar plus that jet rest frame? Is that the question?
Well, it's two frames, right? And you can calculate numbers in either frame, either PP bar or the TT bar.
So he's saying if there's an extra jet in addition to the TT bar.
If there's an extra jet, it's called by the way. I think because you're assuming, when you reconstruct the things, you're assuming that there is, you know, a particular underlying carbon level to the matrix. And if you have an extra jet lying around, then your assumption is wrong, and you're going to reconstruct I don't know what.
Oh, I see.
But they should be, testing this because they're using MCF and LOR for.
So the events that go in these plots are events which don't have an extra jet. Even though they don't really say.
What's the cut?
I don't think that's right.
Yeah. No, it's a very clear, you know, TT bar event.
No, it's inclusive.
Inclusive means that 20% of the time there is an extra jet.
Yeah.
Well, the extra jet is, I mean, remember the peak of the mass is 400, 420. So there's hardly any phase space to emit an extra jet.
Correct.
And it's very soft, and it doesn't affect the top part kinematics very much. You can,
just for the record, the cross section for people by jet and the Teletron is roughly 1.6 people.
Or what jet did you?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is, I mean, the cross section exists. It's not, you know, it's not much smaller than the TT bar cross section.
But it hardly does anything with these numbers, except the percent level.
All right, so let me continue walking you through the numbers. So for less than 450, that is the tops that are not very boosted, these are not that much boosted either, but we actually have a negative asymmetry but with a very large error. And so if you look at the not unfolded number here, it's just -2% plus -3%, so -2%, that's in, it's in the noise, but this is a dramatic indicator of what the unfolding does. So you turn a -2% into a -12%. Almost nobody takes this number here, the minus sign here, seriously. Most people think, well, the asymmetry is very small below 450, and then it gets enormous above 450. What fraction of the data does this represent? So this bin here is about 2/3 of the data, and that's about 1/3 of the data.
Other way around.
This is about 1/3, so above 450 is about 130. What am I saying? 1/3, and that's 2/3. And so,
unfolded is 21 plus or minus question mark.
Sorry.
Before you went.
Yeah.
My question mark is only 10.
If you just did the numbers, yes, then that's 10. I think it's a little bit less, but. So somewhere here, I think this one here is supposed to be above 3 sigma, and I believe this guy is also supposed to be above 3 sigma from the standard model, just barely. So more recently, this was in January, this one here is from March. This is the asymmetry in dileptons, and I already showed you that delta y plot there, and again, we get very large asymmetries here. This is even without going to the high invariant mass versus low invariant mass. So this is even a little bit inconsistent with the other measurements that the asymmetry is so large here. Here I'm quoting the theory that they quoted in that paper. This they expect for this number to have. So this is the supposedly parton level asymmetry that you need to have had to have measured these numbers, right? And the theory for that, they quote from an extra leading order, QCD Monte Carlo is 6 plus minus 1. Here, the theory for this big number here is about 8, not plus minus, plus 8 asymmetry with a very small error. And, sorry?
We have 11 plus 2 minus 1.
Yeah, so this is what the CDF paper quotes, and what you're saying is what I want to hear.
So
Y450,
if you raise it to...
Oh, Y450, I'll show you on, I think it's my next plot. Oops, my password is required. Yes, this shows Y450. So this is the plot, a plot that CDF made where they binned a little bit finer than the 450, less than above 450. So this is everything I'm showing now is about the semi-leptonic analysis from CDF. And so here are events, so these are 50 GeV bins. Here is zero asymmetry. And so on this axis, we're showing the asymmetry, 0.4 means 40%. And you see here below 450, the bins show a negative asymmetry. Above 450, things rise quickly and you have large positive asymmetries, always with large errors. That's why they bin things, or that's why they say they bin things, this bin and that bin, in order to reduce the statistical errors. And the 450, so in to, you know, one knock on this number immediately is, well, you know, if you have a plot with a bunch of data points and you get to choose where you cut it into two halves, you can make an effect bigger that way by using the statistical fluctuations. They say they actually chose the 450 because they have some axi-gluon models and they want to be, that they used as templates, and they want to be maximally sensitive to distinguishing the axi-gluon from QCD, and they say that worked best when they choose the cut at 450. Of course, the axi-gluon models that they chose were models that explain this bump and don't give a big rise before then, so it's a little circular. But anyways, so here's the cut, and the reason for the cut here is because the data is very different there from here.
How can we relate those numbers to this plot? Because if you look at the region below 450, I should get minus 12 plus or minus 16. From these two data points, I'm not sure how to get minus 12.
This is, I think, that number actually, not these numbers. So this is, so I'm not telling you the numbers. That's why you can't relate it. So I think this is the one where you get minus 2 for below, and well, whatever that is for above. Yeah, so this is before unfolding. Yeah, this is the signal, but, oh, sorry, it's not this.
It's 2% what you mentioned before.
Yeah, it's before unfolding, I'm sorry. Yes, it's before unfolding.
What are the dominant contributions to the increase in the...
I don't really know. So they have a matrix which, you know, tells you the different regions and the different in phase space and how they what their fraction what fraction of the events are in these different bins, and then they get different enhancement factors, but I don't know the matrix.
Yeah, I mean, the two steps of the unfolding, right? I mean, first you have to correct from the detector to the hadron level, and then from the hadron to the, quote, parton level is entirely dependent on some Monte Carlo, some shower Monte Carlo. And one thing that bothers me is
hadronization step alone.
Hadronization, that's in itself a big correction. Right. And they use, at least in their first paper, they use Pythia leading order, which didn't have any asymmetry at all. So that worried me that they were applying that correction using a program that didn't have an asymmetry.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, is there any comparison with the data, not only the asymmetry, the cross-section, let's say? Or
is there a comparison of the cross-section? Sure.
In the same variable.
In the same variable.
The NTT.
Sure. How about the next slide? Oops, no.
Before you move on, can I ask another question?
Sure.
So at the high bare mass, like a 600 or 700 GeV, I mean, so you're, I get that you were saying that at such a high bare mass, there's still no jet vetoing? Libido gets a jet, even at such a high bare mass one?
I don't know.
So just a comment about this inclusive versus exclusive. It's important that they're doing something inclusive, in the sense that you have like proton goes to TT bar or TT bar, and the antenna pattern of that is different depending on whether it's forward or backward. And so if you do an exclusive measurement, your one of the antenna patterns is going to tend to radiate more. And so if you were to do an exclusive measurement, you would be biasing towards like forward versus backward. And so it's important that they aren't vetoing these extra jets.
That's fine. I'm just trying to understand exactly what they do.
This is inclusive.
Just at least four jets, right?
Yeah.
So here's the answer about the question, the cross section. That's what I thought would be the next question. So there is an older. So I should have said all of this is about five inverse femtobarnov data. There's an older measurement with two inverse femtobarnov data where they show a plot of the cross section. But with much larger bins and larger errors, so we don't actually have a plot of what they think the cross-section is as a function of MTT bar, but this is the number of events as a function of MTT bar, so it tells you whether there are any bumps in this thing. And so for somebody trying to fit the asymmetry by adding something new, this is a very important plot, and most people are actually ignoring this one because it doesn't say cross-section here, it just says events. And most people's models are ruled out by quite a bit by the shape of the asymmetry, and so that's why they don't like comparing to this one and only to the official one that actually says cross-section.
Just to do all the sort of unfolds and acceptance corrections? Or?
I think this is really just events, if I'm not mistaken. So, and you see, I mean, there's things that aren't exactly right. It seems like things are a little bit above here and down there. Things are a little bit below, and so it doesn't perfectly fit the shape, but it's pretty good. And if you were to have a big bump here at 450, that would show up. So I think that's all.
Right around 650 or so, right, there's this little dip and then rise, which was the kind of the same scale as in your previous slide. That's where the asymmetry got biggest. Are those two things correlated? Probably not, but it seems like a coincidence.
Yeah, I try to read things into wiggles like that. But
I'm not trying to, I mean, I'm not proposing new physics, but like, could a fluctuation in the number of events probably, it wouldn't look like an asymmetry, right?
I didn't really see. I mean, they show you actually a scatter plot of all of the events, where they are and why, and in energy. And yes, there are statistical fluctuations in that scatter plot, but there's no pattern. You fight it out.
The reason I did before it was also because in the previous plot, more or less, the statistical error you saw is more or less equal. Can you go to the previous plot?
Sure.
So your statistical error seems to be quite comparable between 450, 600, 650. Where from the other plot, the cross section seems to be 10 times lower.
Oh, the bins get larger, you mean?
Yeah. So this bin is much larger.
The last two bins, right.
I expect that the error would be, you know, deteriorate as you go to higher masses, because the events are very small, the same point.
Yeah, well, I think this is just
factor two larger, so you'd expect them to be really, let's say, vector 2 root 2. And in fact, if you go back to the cross-section plot, then it looks like a much bigger difference.
I think these are just statistical, so.
The other ones are, but you're saying anyway the systematics are supposed to be small, so even if they have been pulled in, the other shouldn't really be making a difference. And here, I guess the bin sizes are all the same across the whole plot.
Yeah, I think it's all 15.
The tendency is that in the higher, you have more asymmetry and somehow it's more pronounced asymmetry and the lower.
But the point you're trying to make is that the ratio of the error bar is around, whatever, 650 compared to around 450. It's a lot more than 2.
There's nothing wrong there. There's also the magnitude that counts for the error. Yes, because section itself.
Yes.
The last two bins in the previous plot contain roughly equal numbers of events because of that fluctuation there. It's 34 and 29 events if you look at their table.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, statistical error is about so.
This one, I mean,
the last one.
So actually, the last bin here, does it contain overflow?
Does it? I think it does, right? Are all the above 800 events in here, or does it stop at 800?
The previous plot, they were all in the 900 bin, right?
Yeah.
It must be off this plot.
I don't remember if they put the. I mean, they're. What, you know, we're really. I mean, most people are concerned about this total number, and this is not that many events compared to what's going on here. So, whether these things are added that are living behind the white wall here or not, it's not a big difference.
But the rapidity distribution of the lepton, I mean, I found this very convincing, where you just showed the positive sign lepton, the negative sign lepton. We see just correcting the data that there's an asymmetry that's not supported by the standard model.
Yeah, so there are, you know, 25 of those plots in all the different channels, whether you do above 450, below 450, electron, muon, whether it's in this and that, and so I had a hard time picking which one, so I just showed you one.
But the point about this is it's not just the top asymmetry. I mean, you really see it just in the... Just look at the lepton. You don't construct the asymmetry in any frame. You just look at it in the lab, and you see that one of the positive ones go one way and the negative one.
Yeah, so with a lepton asymmetry, I also agree that is nicer in the sense that there's a lot less reconstruction required. On the other hand, W plus jets also has an asymmetry because, you know, the W from an up quark tends to be going one direction. And so if you don't reconstruct the tops, you have a lot of background from W plus jets. And so you do actually, in order to clean up the data, you first have to reconstruct the tops. And then you throw that information away again to make your plot. So it's not that much more convincing to me.
What are the numbers for just
lepton? No, I don't know.
No.
Yeah, you were all supposed to bring your laptop so you can check the numbers. So what else did I think I have.
Where is that plot from? This where?
This, the last one?
Yeah.
That's from the January paper that has all this stuff
that,
here.
That paper.
Yeah.
Martin?
Yeah.
Well, if you have a theory of the spectrum and you'd like to compare to that plot, is there a straightforward way to do it?
Well, I mean, no, I don't know. I mean, you would have to know the efficiencies, I think, if you really want to compare to the details of that plot, the efficiencies as a function of the bins. I mean, you know, on the log plot, this is very much a straight line. And so CDF earlier, or some people in CDF, but that's not a publication, have made comparisons to just, I mean, they fit a straight line to this, and then they've taken new physics models and asked, how significant do they deviate from a straight line? And so that's what I would do.
But I thought what they call data level really does mean corrected to hadron level apart from acceptance cuts. So, I mean, you know, detector effects take into account in those plots apart from the rapidity cuts and the jet cuts and so on. Isn't that right? So it's something you can compare with if you have Monte Carlo.
So data here takes into account holes in the detector, you say? I mean, it's already unfolded? Or?
Yeah. I thought.
If I fold it.
Hmm?
They probably fold the backgrounds in to compare to the data.
I don't know. So I wanted to show you two more things before I can sit down. one.
Before you move on to RAC, do we know what D0's planes are?
I don't know what D0's planes are, no. Except that I heard from someone that someone said that they don't have a minus sign here. That's all I've heard.
Do they have a minus sign in front of the 48?
Probably not, because, you know.
I mean, minus 12 plus minus 60 is not a negative number. It's consistent with zero, right?
I can't agree more.
Is there any chance of just standard model next to next to leading order? Or next, however many next you need to see?
So I was hoping that we'd have a long discussion on that. So let me just finish this, and then and I was hoping you guys could help. So just because we want to talk about the LHC a little bit, I'm showing you also a plot here from the LHC. So the LHC, obviously, because it's PP, it can't measure the asymmetry in quite the same way. They are sensitive to the asymmetry, and we can talk about that if you're interested. But the main way they would be sensitive, if you have a new physics model that explains this thing here, you have new particles, the LHC should just be making those particles. That's really the way one expects to see this, first at ATLAS or CMS. And so ATLAS has a 200 inverse picobarn plot. This is it. And there is no bump in the TT bar invariant mass spectrum that you can see up to as far as they've gone. For comparison, they've given you some cross sections that you would get from some new physics. Unfortunately, the new physics that they've chosen, so this is some Kaluza-Klein gluons at 500 GeV and at 1,000 GeV. Unfortunately, these Kaluza-Klein gluons are not very straightforward Kaluza-Klein gluons. These are Randall-Sundrum Kaluza-Klein gluons with very small coupling to first-generation quarks because their wave function is at the TeV brain, and a large coupling to the right-handed top quark and not so a large coupling to the left-handed top quark. So it's not very straightforward to interpret this. If you were to just say, it's all from a tree-level diagram, which it mostly is, and you just average over all the couplings that appear in that tree-level diagram, it's roughly as if you had a Kaluza-Klein gluon a massive gluon with a coupling that is 1 over root 2 times QCD coupling. So if you were to put in QCD coupling for the strength of your new gluon, you would actually already be sensitive to these two. Here, ATLAS concludes that they're not sensitive to either one of those. Just barely.
The question is whether the red curve and the blue curve could expand the asymmetry.
No, they cannot in this model.
So then what's the point of putting it here if you cannot expand this asymmetry?
The point is that we're doing an LHC workshop, and I wanted to show you that ATLAS is getting close towards being able to see if there is a resonance that might be explaining
it. But these are not models which could explain the AKC.
These are things that have that just add the same kind of stuff that QCD gives. So these are vectorial gluons, axi gluons with axial couplings. Well, actually, the Randall-Sundrum gluon is partially vector, partial axial, but the vector piece dominates, and so they'll mostly add not very asymmetric events. So it gives you some asymmetry, but it mostly screws up the cross-section, and then at higher order it gives you an asymmetry. All right, so with an inverse femtobarn, they can probably already rule out some of the things that have been suggested.
No, one inverse femtobarn won't be enough, because you will get about 50 plus or minus 5, you know, so it's not even one sigma. We won't see it. We will need something like 10 inverse femtobarn to see it.
To see...
For those two models there that you show. You see,
yeah.
In the peak, you have 10 events, roughly, 8, 10. And you have plus or minus 1 or 2. So, you know, you need... So if you multiply by 5, you would get... 40 plus or minus 10, so it's still barely one sigma. So
I think they fit not just to that bin, they fit to the shape. And so they have this plot where they show you the cross section and they show you their expected bound and you know the usual things. And it looks, so I think they're around the 500 now, they say, for this model. And so, yeah, it's, I didn't prepare showing you that one. So what I'm actually interested in is what QCD theory has to say. I have a lot more to say, or I could say a lot more, but not with slides, on models of new physics. But I wanted to know actually what QCD theory has to say, and so we need an expert on that. And I did find a picture of an expert, at least, which I wanted to share with you. Which I think is awesome.
The picture is fine, but this expert never completed anything with the top.
That's on your homepage. I think it's awesome. It's called lab coat or something like that. All right, so.
The public version of this, the public part is over now.